with the book, especially in dealing with my technological limitations. Okay, that's the Shem we are in. Chutz Halvavos, Shara Bitochen, Perek Dalid. Mamish, Mamish, I think the last time we met, we ended right in the middle of almost a mid-sentence. So let's just bring ourselves back up to date to where we are. We're at a paragraph that starts Oyshe Yinotzel, or depending on your layout. But let's bring ourselves back up to date. We've been discussing how you apply bitachon in the realm of life and death. Right? Remember, we had begun discussing how you apply bitachon to all the different areas of life, which he largely broke down to seven. And what we were discussing first was the first category, which is your own personal welfare. And particularly, the first point of that category that he started was life and death. Now he said Hashem predetermines your life span, yet he expects you to be, as with everything else, he expects you to be a participant toward what he decreed. Meaning, you're not going to be able to extend what he decreed, but if you don't participate with what he decreed, if you don't cooperate with what he decreed, it can end up shorter than that. It can end up not working out that way. Because as we've seen, he has the way Hashem set it up is that there's a chain leading up to getting what he decreed to you for you, whether it's life, whether it's health, whether it's parnasa, whether it's all kinds of other things, shiduchim, etc. And there are many links in that chain that are completely outside of your control, many of which begin way before you're born. But the last couple of links in the chain, he actually imposes on you. Right? The classic example that we keep giving to illustrate the concept in a basic way is that if Hashem decrees parnasa on you, that doesn't mean that you won't starve to death. Why? Because it could be that Hashem decreed that you'll have enough money for food. But there are a few conditions. And one of them is that once the food is on the table in front of you, you have to lift it with your fork. A few stages still. You have to lift it with your fork. You have to bother to put it into your mouth. You have to chew. You have to swallow. And if you decide, well, I'll do all the steps up till those will happen. But then, those I don't have kayak for. Here I ran out of gas. So I'm going to leave the food on the plate in front of me. And if Hashem decided that I should be well-nourished, then I'll be well-nourished. No, we see that there are the last steps. Hashem said, yes, I decreed this food for you. But part of that process is to buy a fork. You have to learn how to use it, and you have to use it. So now, getting into the subject of life and death, they said if a person does put himself at risk, remember last time we ended with the discussion of how his very interesting take on Shmuel's exchange with Hashem. When Hashem commanded Shmuel to go appoint a new king, and Shmuel said to Hashem, how can I go appoint a new king? If Shaul hears about that, he'll kill me. And that was not rendered a lack of bitachon, because it was a given that Hashem has a standing command, look out for your welfare. That's a standing command. And if Hashem now came and said, go do something that risks your life, so it's kind of like with any other sugya, any other area of halacha, if two halachas clash, you have to sit down and work out how the two are meant to come together. It wasn't that Shmuel was scared. It wasn't that Shmuel knew that Hashem was telling him to do something, he would be ready to walk into a fire. But what was the issue? The issue is that Shmuel understood that he now has two seemingly conflicting commands. There's a standing command, make sure to preserve your life. Make sure to make your life as long as it can be. And now there's another command that says, go endanger your life. So Shmuel approached it in a scholarly way. He asked Hashem a scholarly question. How am I supposed to put these two together? Like the mashal that we gave was, if Hashem on Shabbos commands a Navi, I want you to drive to such and such a place and deliver a message. So It's part of the Navi's job to sit down and determine, did Hashem mean that I should do it on Shabbos? Or did Hashem mean that the two should, that both commands, the command to keep Shabbos and the command to do that, come together somehow? How? Maybe Hashem meant that I should go Matzei Shabbos. It's something that the Navi has to use the tools at his disposal to determine. And this is what Shmuel was doing. And therefore, it was not deemed a lack of bitachon that Shmuel asked that question. On the contrary, we see Hashem responding in a way that indicates that Hashem accepted the question. Hashem told him, you're right. I did not mean that you should go endanger your life blatantly. You do it in a more of a sophisticated kind of way. But whatever it is, we're bringing out the point that it's considered a holy charge to do what you can do to live as long as you can and to take whatever measures you can, make whatever efforts you can, and certainly to avoid doing things that could cut it short. Question.
Whatever means reasonable, right? Not
yes.
Whatever. It means whatever reasonable effort.
Yes. 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 Absolutely. Oh, so there will be many areas, right? There will be many areas where it gets gray, as with all areas of bitachon and hishtadlus. And in each case, it's going to have to be dealt with, as we say, legufa shel inyan. This is one example. What if there's an experimental drug? Another very common example. There's actually a question that the place can discuss. You know that if you travel through the desert or if you travel through the sea, you have to make hagoymel afterwards. Why? Because it's a makam sakan. So it's a question that's discussed in much earlier literature. Traveling through deserts and seas was a regular part of making a welfare in earlier times. So what are you supposed to do? And the answer is that there are things that are considered a part of the way of the world that are inevitable. And it's always a challenge to draw the line. But at the place can say, yes, there is a certain element of danger in traveling through seas and deserts. But there's a minigah olam, which basically there's a broad human understanding that it's a risk you have to take in order to properly fulfill another aspect of hishtadlus. Where exactly you draw the line, yes, it does get vague. But these are the broad line, the broad strokes. I'll give just to bring this out in another way, right? We have to understand that life is not our property. It is something very sacred that Hashem entrusted us with, our own life. So Rav Avigdor Miller often he poked fun at the macho concept of being brave and risking your life to stand up for unnecessary principles or things like that don't really warrant saving a life. So he used to irritate people by constantly quoting the Chinese saying that says, the hero is the man who survives. So yes, run away. That's the thing to do. But I'm going to show them that I'm scared. If you live another few years, yes, show them that you're scared. Okay. So now let's move on. What happens if a person does risk his life? So he told us, and this is really where we ended last time, he told us that one of two things will happen. And we discussed the first of those two things. The first thing that will happen is, the first thing that might happen is that the person will die. The person takes an unnecessary, endangers himself unnecessarily, and figures he has bitachon in Hashem, he might die. And come to Shemayim and say, Hashem, I trusted in you. And Hashem said, you can trust in me that if you do what I want, I'll take care of you. But if you don't do what I want, I'll hold you accountable for that. So that's number one. And where we left off, now we're up to the next step. What is another alternative? What else might happen when a person unnecessarily risks his life? So here we're up to Aisha Yinatsa. Let's move from here. This is really what we're up to. The other possibility is Hashem might step in to save him.
Page 404.
Oh, Yashar Koyach. In the English edition, it's page 404, you said?
Yeah.
404. Huh. So the other possibility is that Hashem might save you. But don't say, oh, okay, you see, I can do what I want and Hashem will take care of me. Hashem says, yeah, but it's going to cost you. It's going to come at the expense of some of your zchusim. You had a lot of reward waiting for you in the next world, but you're going to have to spend that on this special merit that you had to invoke to be saved because of your reckless behavior.
Someone has suggested that if you don't put on the seatbelt in the car, you're using up your freedom.
Oh. So there are many, many practical examples of safety measures, health measures. Let's put it this way. In a general way, if a person neglects to do what's safe because he's lazy, because whatever, because he doesn't have koyach, then yeah, it's using up zchuyos. Just what we have to, it's always complex. It's always complex. Why? So let's say, for example, don't get me wrong, okay? Put on a seatbelt when you get into a car. But we're discussing the sugya. Okay, when we're discussing the sugya, you know, there's nothing to it. It's not a big deal. It's too hard for you to schlep the thing. So maybe you have a patur. But yes, put on a seatbelt when you get into a car. But if we're really going to break it down analytically, let's say a person has a reason he doesn't want to put on a seatbelt. Okay? So how many zchusim will it use up? Certainly not the same as a person who does something very dangerous, right? If a person does something that ups his chances of getting hurt by 1 in 1,000, it's not the same as a person who ups his chances by getting hurt at 1 in 10. 1 in 10 is going to be more costly in terms of zchusim. 1 in 2 is going to be very expensive in terms of zchusim, right? And if you do something that gives you a 25% chance of surviving, that will be held as a real avera that will be very costly. So anything, any area of neglect will cost, when it was just pure neglect, will cost something. Just you always have to know, depending on the danger level that you're actually creating, sometimes things become I've seen people who are very makbid on the things that got a lot of publicity, like let's say seatbelts or things like that. But then things that are pushed at an issue of seicho, but there weren't big advertising campaigns about them. They're not as careful. It comes out that they don't really have a consistent caution level. Like for example, if people are going to let kids run around on a roof that's not high enough, where the fence is not high enough, right? But it makes the grade of what you need in order to get your licenses, but tachlis, these are lebedicky kids, but there aren't big publicity campaigns about it, right? So that's a lot more serious. I once heard somebody say that there's a din to make a maka on your roof. Maka means a gate, right? A gate that's high enough to prevent people from falling. Chalila. So I heard somebody say, this is what in Yiddish they call this an oibrachachem, right? A little too smart for his own good. He said, why do I make a maka on my roof? I make it because there's a din. I can take care of my kids. I'm capable of being on top of them. But there's a din to make a maka, so I make a maka. I said, okay, Baruch Hashem, there's a din to make a maka. Right? So,
is it based on the knowledge in the generations? For example, there was a time when there were no seatbelts in cars. My husband remembered that, unfortunately. And there was a time when smoking wasn't considered dangerous.
That's right.
So those wouldn't have been reasonable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very much an issue of the knowledge available. It's not objective. And yeah, if a person 100 years ago smoked and then was nifter as a result because of that, then he can comfortably come to Shemayim and say, Hashem, this was your gzera for me. I didn't do anything wrong. But nowadays, it's a very different story. I'm usually hesitant to say things in a very stark, blunt kind of way. But I'm going to quote Rabbi Victor Miller here. That in earlier times, the Poskim said, like when it started becoming a little iffy, you know, smoking Is it dangerous? Is it not dangerous? So the Poskim said, and you don't have to worry about, like, you know, unusual kinds of things. So it was a few decades later when the subject came up, Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, today the Pasuk of Shem Ripsayim Hashem wouldn't suffice. Today you need a Pasuk that says, Shem Mishugoyim Hashem. You know, Hashem protects the insane.
Right.
So, right. Every person, it definitely, my point is just, the reason that I'm being a little bit, if we'll call it, what's the word? Like taking a little bit of a step back with this is that we don't want to take one area that gets a lot of focus and turn that into the one absolute area of safety, right? Whereas other areas that are push at the matter of seichel don't get attention, right? At the end of the day, everybody should wear a seatbelt, but it is not the most, right? People are going to get this wrong and they're going to see me as encouraging or discouraging, you know, encouraging not wearing seatbelts. I hope I'm being properly understood here. Leaving a hot water urn with boiling water in it in a place where kids can easily get to, right? But being very machbit about seatbelts is a certain very gross inconsistency, because one is a lot more of an issue than the other is, right? So yes, all safety issues should be taken carefully. You know, I'll tell you a couple of mises to this effect. Rav Moshe Feinstein was one time being driven somewhere, and the driver was speeding. He was taking Rav Moshe to some sort of chashuva. Wherever Rav Moshe was going, it was a chashuva event. He wasn't going golfing. So the driver was pulled over. He was given a serious fine for speeding. So he asked Rav Moshe afterwards, he says, does it say that shluchei mitzvah don't come to harm? Doesn't it say that shluchei mitzvah don't come to harm? So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, he says, yes, that's why you were caught. The cop caught you before you could come to harm. Right? There was another ma'aser. There was another ma'aser where a person came to Rav Chaim Kanievsky to ask a bracha. Ask for a bracha. What bracha was he asking for? He said that he's facing a case. He's facing a court case because he had driven after he got a shlila. You know, what do you say it in English? When they suspend your license, right? His license was suspended because of a few reckless incidents. Then he had driven with a suspended license recklessly again, and now he was facing charges. What do you know? Surprise, surprise. So he came to Chaim Kanievsky for a bracha. Chaim Kanievsky asked him, what's it about? And so he told him what happened. So Chaim Kanievsky said, I'm not going to give you a bracha. I hope that you sit a little. I hope you get a bit of a sentence. Yeah. They say the shame, the stipler, that we have to wonder if Chazal were alive today, if they would prohibit driving altogether. So, yes, these are matters that are to be taken very seriously, but not in a way of like, well, what are the big things that are publicized? And let's go with those. It means employing seichel all the time with all areas. Okay. So now, Chazal b'zeim. It's like Chazal said, "La'olam al yamid adam b'mkayim sakana v'yem asher isim leinis." Do not stand in a dangerous place and say, "Well, Hashem will make me a nes." Because maybe Hashem won't. And you have no such guarantee. I remember when we were shortly after we were married, there was the whole Iraq business, and they were worried about chemical warfare. And people were being told at that point to get their gas masks and to also tape up the windows. Remember that? You told to tape up the windows. So we were in a rented apartment. We taped up the windows. That makes the windows sticky afterwards, right? So I remember the fellow who, the Balabais lived in Chutzlars, but he had somebody who used to take care of the apartment. Like, you know, he came by, he saw that we taped up the windows. He was a little annoyed because then it's a lot of scrubbing and, you know, afterwards. So he told him, look, you know, this is the matzah. He said, where's your emunah? I said, I'm going to show me a pasuk in the Torah that says that if I don't tape my windows, I'll be fine, and I won't tape my windows. But this is what he's saying. Don't put yourself into a dangerous place and say, "Shoyis in lines." Now, I'll add, At that time, they were also saying to get the gas masks. I mean, these are all questions of Shikul Hadas. At the time, we were tourists, pure tourists, which meant that getting a gas mask would cost us a lot of money. We weren't sure if we should spend the money or not. So we asked the Rav, I asked somebody who I thought would give the answer. He said, I'm not enough of an authority to answer that. He directed me to it was Rav Meir Bransdorfer, one of the big Dayanim on the Badatz, not the one from today, his father, not alive anymore. And he like considered the shayla, and he said, no, you don't have to. Meaning it's a shayla of Shikul Hadas. You know, you have to weigh. It's not just an automatic no-brainer. People say it's dangerous. No, when there are other considerations, it's halacha shayla. It's a question of weighing all the different considerations and reaching a maskana. Certainly, there's a distribution point two doors down. But you don't have the koyach. You know, you'd rather relax on the couch. I don't think you'll get a psak. Don't get the gas mask, right? But there's a question of weighing what is lamaisa, taking an assessment based on the knowledge of the situation versus the expense of money. It's a question that requires an answer with proper shikul hadas. Okay. What's that? No, so he told us you don't have to get the gas mask. We were told, tape the windows. Actually, we were told it, tape the windows. Why? We had tape in the house. And it was a 7-minute job, right? And he said, the gas mask you don't have to get. And I'm here to tell the tale. I don't think anybody wore gas masks in the end at that point.
Gas masks, and they come with this little shot inside, like an antidote shot they came with. And so my 3-year-old son, who got into everything, managed to shoot himself.
There you go. So you have to worry if the safety is in the other direction. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, so don't stand in a place of danger and say, well, Hashem will make me an ace, because he might not. And Shema ain loisin loinis, because maybe he won't make an ace. Vim oisin loinis, minakin lemis kli yosef. And if he does make an ace, nisim cost. It's going to come at the expense of your zchuyas. V'omar Yaakov avinu olav hashalom. It's like the famous Targum uncles. Yaakov Avinu said, "Katonti mikol hachasodim. I've become small because of all of your chasodim." Omar mitargim, the pirushoi, and uncles explain, "Ze'eun zachvosai mikol chiston mikol tavavon. My zchuyos, my merits have diminished because of all the supernatural chasodim that you did with me." Meaning, Yaakov was conscious of that. Okay.
Only nisim that he has to do because you put yourself in danger. In other words,
yes.
He just gives you nisim carte blanche, free of charge. Let's
yes,
say.
We're talking about that things that change. You, yeah, yeah. That's clearly what we're talking about. We're talking about situations where the person knowingly went and, so to speak, required, so to speak, Hashem to go and change the course of his plans. This is what Avigdor Miller used to say. He said, Hashem loves nature. How do we know that? Because this is Hashem's most prevalent bria. This is the way, who made nature? Like, let's remember, nature is not like kind of like a certain default automatic kind of thing that, you know, if Hashem decides to make sin, he makes a change. But otherwise, who created nature? Who created nature? This is Hashem's system. If it's Hashem's system, it means that Hashem desires this to be in place. Don't go necessitating changes. Now, when Hashem decides to do it in order to convey, whether it's wants to save someone from a tight spot that they fell into, or because Hashem wants to make a special display of affection or attention, Hashem does that. But for people to go and, so to speak, necessitate it, that is never considered a positive thing. We see in the Gemara where some of the greatest chachamim were taken to task for doing things that required a nes.
Doing things that required
a nes, meaning they put themselves into situations that, dangerous situations that then required a nes. Huh. Okay. K'may shalman, now we move into the next level of this same point. K'may shalman b'chayim v'mavis, this is what we're talking about when it comes to life and death. Ken Neumar, I'll just add another thing. Again, all the two quotes from Rabbi Victor Miller and from Salman Urbach, Mamish, along the same lines. Somebody had been in a serious accident and was hurt, and et cetera. Yes, Rabbi Victor Miller, like what Kabbalah should he be Mekabel as a result? Rabbi Victor Miller, in his very blunt style, said to look carefully before you cross next time. And along similar lines was a maisa where a kid was burned because of very hot coffee that spilled on the kid. And the parents asked Reb Shlomo Zalman also along similar lines. Again, you have to assume that both of these gedolim knew the situation, right? But they asked Reb Shlomo Zalman, like, what are we supposed to take away from it? He said, you take away from it, you keep hot cups of coffee far away from little kids. Okay. Now, K'may shamanu b'chayim u'bamaves, as we've discussed when it comes to life and death, so it's the same idea, just to the next level. Kein noima b'chiyuv tviya siboy sabriyus, v'amozoin, v'amalbush, v'adira, v'amidus ha-tevois, v'laharchik shekinim. The same applies, you have to apply these same concepts when it comes to health, when it comes to sustenance, when it comes to clothing, having a place to live, and even when it comes to character and personality things. To try to have the best type of personality and midas that you can, and to work against any negative character traits. It's interesting that he brings this into this discussion. Well, we'll have to get to that, Bezos Hashem. In Beirur Emunasa, I mean, he's putting this also into the realm of Bitachon, because this is, not, I'm going to take out the time just to, even though I really want to work in order, but just a word about that last one, that he's sticking in Midas Tevis, personality, character traits. It's interesting how he's putting this into the realm of Bitachon and Ishtadlis. Because, you know, what sometimes happens is that a person, we're born with certain Midas, with certain natural inclinations. Some people are more excitable. Some people are more laconic. Some people are more energetic. Some people are more lazy, etc., etc. Now, we have a picture of the objectively good midas that we're supposed to have, right? And we all try to work towards it. Maybe we also read biographies about people who were born malachim and never had challenges in their lives. Those people feature exclusively in biographies, by the way. And we feel frustrated that I can be working and working, but I'm not that person. Not Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, right? All of his angelic personality really was. So there's bitachon and there's ishtadlus here also, even though this is mamash and erev avodas Hashem, which we're going to get to later. But there's bitachon that the midas I was born with were given to me because it's good for me to have been born with those midas, and that this should be my realm of work. Now I'm going to be working with those midas. Let's say a person has a kas problem. So you cannot say, Shem made me an angry type. Apparently that's good for me. It's great for my family. And we're just going to stick with that. Right? No. Chas v'shalom. You have to be working very hard to overcome that kas, to get it in check, to tame it, but at the same time, to have bitachon that this struggle was given to me because this is what's good for me. And I have to be doing mine. I have to be working. But the level of success that I'm going to have and the fact that this is a struggle for me, that's from Hashem. Now here it's a fine line because I just said the level of success that you're going to have. So in other words, a person can also turn this into a license. Whether I'm going to be matzleach or not is up to Hashem. Okay. That already is going to bear on how much effort I have to put into it. No, it's a very fine line here. You have to be putting in the utmost efforts while at the same time recognizing that your bechira is to work. Your bechira is not to become Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, not in a day, perhaps not even in 50 years. But you have to have bitachon. This struggle was given to you because this is perfect for you. And work at it hard without letting up. And realize that if the fact that, the Tanya brings this out, he says sometimes a person can get frustrated over the fact that he has a certain struggle and he's working and working and working and it's frustrating and demoralizing that after 15 years, I'm still struggling with the same thing. Now, a person should be making progress, but a person might feel like, I'd like to get to a place where that's it. Anger is a non-issue. It's not part of my life anymore. Now I'm going to move on to a different mida, a completely different mida. This is something you have to appreciate, that is actually the nachas ruach for Hashem, that you spend your entire life struggling with this area of struggle. That's where you have to have the bitachon. Not becoming a changed person, it's frustrating, it's demoralizing. Here's where bitachon comes into play. Hashem doesn't want you to be a changed person. He wants you to be you exactly the way that he made you. No, I shouldn't say that. He wants you to be you, not exactly the way that he made you. No. He wants you to be an improved you, but a you, right? And what is you? You are defined by exactly the circumstances and koichas and challenges that Hashem put into your life. So it's again that balance between the ishtadlis and the bitachon. Back to the master list. When it comes to health, when it comes to sustenance/nourishment, when it comes to having enough, having the clothing you need, having the shelter you need, and yes, personality traits. So, in Beira and Lunasai, you have to realize with all these areas that Hashem decided in advance exactly what you should have. And the different efforts that you're going to make are not going to alter Hashem's decree for you. But yet, you should be working toward doing the best you can in all these areas. Health, food, clothing, shelter, etc. Kasha yishle bala adoma lachoy shayisa, just like a person who, a farmer who has land, is expected to plow it, lanakoysim and akutsim, to clear it out of any, get rid, to weed it, plant it, water it, and then after all that, you know that you still can't break apart the seeds and pull them up out of the ground. You can put a lot of work in. But the whole process of the seed sprouting and turning into and ending up having a successful crop is a lot of waiting and watching that involves. But you have to do all that. And then, yiftach ala b'ri yisbarach lafroiso v'lishom min apgoyim. Then is the place for bitachon on Hashem. He'll do what he decided in terms of making it sprout properly. A lot of things that don't depend on you. You have to do a lot of work. It's a lot of sweat working a field. But then the quality of the crop, and also there can be all kinds of destructive factors that are not in your hands. It can be locusts, it can be tornadoes, it can be all kinds of negative weather. And ultimately, you're hoping to Hashem that he should be the one to make it be a blessed crop. Now you can't say, here's my field, Hashem can do what he wants. If he wants, it'll sprout. Doesn't work that way. You're expected to be that link in the chain as we discuss. Now, and Hashem now has exactly what he wants you to get for this year. Now what happens if you put in all that work? And you're disappointed. You put in all the work you should, and you're working diligently and conscientiously. And at the end of the day, Nebuch, locusts come and they devour everything right before it's time for harvest. So here's where you say, I'm going to be rewarded for all the effort that I put in. That was not a wasted effort because I was cooperating with Hashem's plan. And now I'm embracing what Hashem decreed upon me in terms of the loss that I'm suffering.
you get rewarded for doing that, embracing that loss and saying it's up to Hashem.
Absolutely. That's that we might call that the epitome of the reward. Kabbalah's Hayisur, right? When we are faced with ordeals, we do what we can, but when the things don't go the way we expected, one of the most fundamental part of our growth processes is embracing what Hashem sends our way, from the small frustrations to the big things. Whenever we hear about the merits that misfortune, that suffering, that ordeals bring, the merit lies in that, saying, Hashem, people quite away jump to, what message is Hashem sending me? Why is this happening? What's the meaning behind it? Don't jump there. Meaning, that's not where the big profit lies. That's not where the main success lies. It doesn't lie in figuring out exactly what Hashem is intending. The big call is, I sent this to you, embrace it. And like I said, from the tiny frustrations throughout the day to the big things in life. Question.
Not the actual whatever happened, the concept that Hashem sent it.
Right. Meaning, if Hashem sent this for me, he wants this for me, then I'm willing to take it. Let's put it that way. If Hashem wants this for me, knowing better for me than what's good for me, I'm willing to take it. Why is this so important, the embracing? Because it's a fundamental dynamic in your relationship with Hashem. You want to live with Hashem in a way of, it's like the Chazon Ish put it, Emuna, the way he put it is, maybe we said this recently, Emuna is halacha, bitachon is lamais, meaning like this. You can learn Hilchas Shabbos on Tuesday. Learn Hilchas Shabbos and master Hilchas Shabbos on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right? It's halacha, it's not lamaisa because it's not Shabbos now. You're not practicing it. On Shabbos, it's lamaisa. So he said, bitachon is emunah applied. We want to live with Hashem in our lives. Living with Hashem in our lives means not just that I'm conscious of Him, not just that I obey Him, but it is letting Him guide my life. That's the kind of relationship that Hashem has. If Hashem says, this is what I want you going through now, I say to Hashem, okay, I want to go through. And then I'm very happy. That's already a higher madriga. Let's start with the basic madriga. If this is what you want me to go through, I'm accepting it. And I'm going to do that willingly. Higher madriga is that I'm happy about it. Even a higher madriga is that I'm very happy about it. But we shouldn't jump straight there. We can suffice by saying that, Hashem, if this is what you want for me, okay, a big okay. Right? That's...
You don't have to want the Easter.
Right. That's true. But I will say that if you can get from there to the place of Hashem, if you want this for me, then I want it for me, you've taken it to the next level. But let's not undermine the first level by introducing the next level. Okay, let's realize that by just being able to say, Hashem, if this is what you want for me, okay, that already puts you into a very, very high place. Whenever we talk about different madrigas, it's very important. The problem with talking about different madrigas is that you think, oh, then what's the point? Don't be mevater on billions because there are also trillions. Yeah.
What about me wrong?
How do we accept it? Really, it comes back to the same point. If we realize it's always difficult to talk about particular instances, and therefore, when it comes to these things, the best way to talk about it is by equipping ourselves when it's not a case in point. But I can't do it off the cuff. I shouldn't do it off the cuff. But it should be done. We shouldn't just say we can't address these things. We can and we should address these things. And the truth is, I'll say more than that. It's been long enough that we can already start talking about it. When it's fresh, then all we're supposed to be doing is hurting and hurting along with the people who are hurting. But you know what? Even then, when you ask, how are we supposed to accept that? I'm going to try to find Bli Neder. I'll come back to this next week, Bli Neder. And I'm going to try to find the recording that I have from one of the people who was there and how he accepted it. How he accepted it. His name was Rav Avigdor Chiyus, Chiyut, Sfardi. And he was there, and he was hurt, and he lost a child and a Talmud there. Together. He was together with the child and Talmud. He survived. Both of them didn't. And instead of me answering how to accept something that I didn't go through, Bli Nedar, I'm going to try to find that recording and perhaps present how he accepted it. Because we don't want to run away from it. It's easy to just say, we don't want to talk, we don't understand. But we do understand the call. Do we understand why Hashem did it? No. But we do understand the call. We do understand how Hashem wants us to relate to it. Bli Nedar, like I said, this is a type of thing that I can't and shouldn't answer off the cuff, but not run away from it either. And therefore, Bli Nedar will answer it, but not off the cuff. Bli Nedar, we'll come back to that next week. Oh, what I meant by that was, what's that? You're wondering the same thing. What I meant was, we said that to be able to say, if Chas V'Shalom, a person is put through an ordeal, to be able to say, I'm happy to accept this, Smechim B'Yisurim is the Madrega that the Chachamim call it. It's an extremely high level. We said the more basic level is to just say, Hashem, if you're sending this way, that I'm accepting it. I said, people here, well, if I'm not happy about it, then what's the point? So being able, my point was that being able to say, Hashem, if you sent this to me, I'm accepting it, even though it's hard for me to be happy with it. That's billions. The fact that there's a higher Madrega, and sometimes you hear a higher Madrega, you say, well, the lower Madrega is worthless. No. When we're talking about something like this, this basic Madrega is something that puts a person head and shoulders above others. You don't have to be above others. That's not really the point. The point is that puts you head and shoulders above. Okay? And that is, we're calling that billions, even though it's really more than that. And the fact that there are even higher Madregas that the most sublime of people could come to, so we hear that there are trillions, a trillion doesn't make a billion worthless. If you're able to make $1 billion and you hear that someone else has a trillion, so you say, you know what, I'll just stay homeless, forget about it. That was my point. Is that clear? Okay. A good
Okay.
Toda,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I got the bach.